All right, ladies and gentlemen, very special interview today with Mr. Seth Levy, right? Levy?
Yeah.
Levy Levi?
Sure.
What do you say? How do you say
it? I grew up pronouncing it Levy.
Levy.
But I don't know, like, there's, like, Eugene Levy,
uh-huh.
The famous comedian.
Okay.
And so I don't know if
it's up in the air.
It's up in the air. It's debatable.
But one thing that's not debatable is that this guy has started Amazon and he took Amazon by storm. And he's going to tell us a story. We have the exclusive interview here tonight. No, it's fine. Could you tell us how, when you got started, how you got started, and even maybe before?
Yeah. So how far back should I go?
The beginning.
The very beginning. Okay. So my mother and father met in Miami, Florida.
Yeah.
Truth is, it actually kind of does tie into what I ended up doing kind of leading up to Amazon.
Okay.
My mom was a commercial artist,
okay.
And that's what she did. My dad was kind of a businessman, I guess you could say, entrepreneur in some respects. What I did before Amazon was kind of the same. I was mostly in graphic design, mm-hmm. branding, brand mm-hmm. design. Mm-hmm. Had some boring other areas that we'll talk about.
But designing other stuff, you mean?
Or interfaces and digital products.
Geeky stuff.
Yeah, just kind of nerdy designer stuff, right?
My favorite, by the way. I mean, I love geeky stuff. I'm a geek. I'm an ultra geek. If you notice, like, we try to design things like the screen.
I feel a very geeky vibe. I love it.
Okay, good.
So I just kind of did that for a bit. And there was always... Even when I was running a small studio or I was even doing work that I really liked, there was always some undercurrent of one, it wasn't from, could have been optimized better in some way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For me, it was, I always looked at the service model as something that was incredibly inefficient, at least in terms of how I ran it,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to rely on other people.
And you were working on someone else's service company, right? It's not your service company?
I started working for a software company and I don't know. If I'm being honest, I hated it, right? It's like my first job out of school, I thought it was going to be something that it wasn't,
mm-hmm.
And or wanted to be something other than it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for a bit and worked at a few companies, ran a marketing department here, did whatever there. And I just was kind of like, I don't know, this sucks.
Okay.
I think mostly because as a designer, I was all designers agree with this, or maybe it's just me or... my own viewpoints, but it was always I felt like something could always be done better. And for mm-hmm. whatever reason, the owner of the company or the people managing just mm-hmm. never cared
mm-hmm,
in that
mm-hmm.
way. They was they weren't concerned with constant improvement and optimization,
mm-hmm.
which is mm-hmm. something that really interests me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, make a suggestion. This is wrong. Or this can be optimized. Well, I was kind of like, oh, whatever. Just get back to work.
Is this suggestions on the design aspect or more of the company, level?
It would be, at first it was more related to what I did.
Okay.
Like the company I worked for at the time, this was, probably early 2000s. They're still doing paper newsletters and we have the internet's kind of coming about.
What
are we doing here? The website's janky. I'm like, we should really put effort in here. I'm no. Just do the newsletter.
Yeah.
Newsletters, right?
Okay.
I'm like, anyway, so it's kind of I'd run into these things where I'd run into these small little disagreements with however the company was being run. I don't know if this is maybe something that entrepreneurs run into or designers run into or just Seth runs into.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure.
I think it's a common thing where you want to, especially people who want something better, want something more.
Yeah.
It's kind of challenging the status quo, right? Whatever's normally there, there's always an improvement. And I think most people can relate to that in some way for sure.
Yes.
I was always always.
Yeah.
Even with my mama.
Yeah.
Hey, then we do this joint. My way. My mama, she's very intense. And it's and I ask her why. And she tells me, because it's mama says so or whatever.
Perfect response.
I love my mama. But
yeah.
I'm just saying most people, I think family, business, anywhere, people are striving for something better. So yes, I think we can sympathize with you.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So that was definitely something I had my attention on and I'm not really aware of it. Just kind of wow, something, this could be improved in some way. And it's just, it wouldn't be let done, so
mm-hmm.
to speak. And so I was like, okay, so I spent some time there and moved on. But even when I started kind of branching out on my own and worked as a freelancer
mm-hmm.
for some other
mm-hmm.
software companies mm-hmm. and kind of doing branding and interface design, all sort of stuff, it was still I could even see my own kind of where that, not even just, my abilities and what I was doing, but
mm-hmm.
the model itself seemed to be fundamentally broken
mm-hmm.
in that it wasn't, you couldn't, how do I say this? Like scalability isn't inherent to the service-based kind of business model unless you can scale personnel, right?
Yes,
like,
correct.
Or you can like outsource.
Unless you're going to manage a lot of people.
Manage a lot of people, or you can figure out a way to, you know, get talent for it's almost like with product, right? You have to source something at a certain price so mm-hmm. you can sell it and make a profit. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. it's the same thing with talent mm-hmm. when it comes to design or any kind of service-based field that isn't just like, you know, a monkey pushing a button, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, yeah. And what year is this?
This is, this is probably around 2005 is when I kind of start to branch out on my own.
Okay.
And was like, you know, just kind of getting my feel for what I was doing, but also kind of realizing like this business model kind of sucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've run into it. I don't like service type of things very much.
And like,
it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, if you can like standardize and codify and like find people and like you've got that kind of like sourcing model down for talent, then great, you could probably just kill it. But I think at some point the guys who are really good are going to kind of go like, hey, we can do this, and they're going to move on, and it's going to be like a constant like war of attrition with mm-hmm, regards mm-hmm. to with regards to finding people. And,
did that happen to you? Hire designers and then they went off by themselves or anything like that?
No, I mean, I always kept it pretty small just because I liked the concept of like managing a lot of people. Again, mm-hmm. was this also like, right, I'm not sure I want to kind of like that activity.
Sure, sure.
I think part of it was also like trying to keep the quality high. And I felt like, because I'm a bit of a do-it-yourselfer, mm-hmm. we've talked about in the past, right? I felt like it would be hard for me to control that. Mm. So as I kind of looked at and like went through, I'm sorry, I spent a lot of time on this, but like, you know.
No, this is perfect. That's great. Yeah.
So, you know, kind of coming through, you know, and finding my way through, you know, being a designer, entrepreneur, running a studio, whatever. Was this kind of like, I'd kind of get into this thing where I'd go like, okay, good. I'm like, I want to run this like small little shop. So I want to keep the quality high, mm-hmm. but I want to make a lot of money because, you know, like cars and stuff, right? Sure. Or whatever yeah, yeah, you want to sure, like sure, insert sure. the blank here. Right.
Absolutely.
And, I just kept kind of running into this problem of scalability.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What was your peak at that point? 2005? How much was the most you had made?
Oh,
that's in a year.
Dude, it wasn't much. Maybe like, I mean, a lot for people who are making nothing, maybe mm-hmm. like 70, 80 grand,
okay,
something
okay.
like that, running a small studio. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Again, getting like piecemeal stuff. It was great because I could work like, it was great. I could work like a month. I could make like 15 grand on some project mm-hmm. and then I'll go, great. Now I got to like find another project. I spend like 2 months like lining up another client, mm. you know? And then sometimes you might get like two or three kind of like bunched up or someone with like a big project. And that would kind of like go for 2-3 months and make like, you know, like 30 grand or
okay,
something,
okay.
right? So, but it was always just like, again, it was like inherently unscalable.
Yeah.
Because, mostly because of me, you
sure.
know, because I wanted to have a lot of control over it. So, ended up, I think around 2013, 2014, basically, maybe a little earlier than that. Anyways, maybe 2000.
So you were doing the studio and stuff and freelance stuff from 2005 all the way up to that
yeah,
time?
Off okay. and on. Okay. I mean, I like one point I was like, this is getting kind of boring. I kind of played with the idea of working for a bigger design house up in Boston. I was like, move up to Boston. This is going to suck. It's like super cold and expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
So I decided not to do that. And then around, I think it was around 2012, maybe a little earlier, I just kind of go like, okay, well, let me I can take what I know and what I'm passionate about, mm-hmm. which is design and branding. And if I can like turn that into something,
yep.
you know, and something that's not service-based, but maybe something that's product-based. So I started partnering with people kind of like at random mm-hmm. a little bit, which was kind of a mistake, but also exciting. Like someone have an idea for something and go, yeah, let's make it. And so we make it. And then we get to the point where I like realize we couldn't like build it.
Because yeah. It was, dreaming.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Beautiful. That's great.
You get like 3 months into a project, be like, wow, this is like, you know, you're trying to find developers, and then like they would lose interest, and I would be like get frustrated and like kind of move off of it or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When I was a little kid, by the way, I did a design project for an inventor in my third grade class.
Oh,
and
nice.
I invented a monster truck that would go through traffic, and the car like you would skip traffic because it would go up and go through all the cars. And then I got a reward. Like the teacher said, that was the best invention.
Oh.
So she could skip traffic. I was like, hell yes. But when I went to the design board, I couldn't make it.
Because it was like 14 feet tall. And like,
yeah.
like
anyway, but I get the idea. You yeah. think of something and the execution may not be there, but you know.
Exactly. And sometimes it was like logistically, it didn't work out, or like you'd get it to a point where we're like, cool, you can, you know, as a designer, you can, you can bring something so far, but when you have to, like, the rubber meets the road, yes, and you actually got to get that thing built,
yeah,
not only becomes the challenge of, you know, as far as digital products go, like will people actually use this if you build it, but how do you actually get it built so it's not jankety? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I ran a few of those and, you know, had a few ventures, and they kind of, like, blew up, and then, well, not blew up, like, in a good way, but, like, oh, like, lots of excitement, and then just kind of, like, disintegrated, fizzled. Right?
Yeah. Did you get anything? Did you get any patents or any product created?
There was, like, we got close on one.
Okay.
It was a really interesting niche, and I think even today it would probably still do really good.
Oh, wow, okay.
The person I partnered with at the time had a lot of, and I guess we all probably speak to this if we ever talk about, you know, partnerships in, mm-hmm, in this kind of, like, mm-hmm, in our talk here, but I have some very definite ideas about what you should.
Bad partnerships.
Well, and that's led me to some, like, realizations about what probably, you know, make up a good partnership and a good kind of venture. Okay. Like, we can talk about that at some time or whatever, but the person who I partnered with has had a real deep understanding of the business. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, deep, mm-hmm, deep understanding of the business. And that was sort of the ace in the hole, so to speak. And when that disappeared, it became like a thing where I had all this specialized experience over here, and he had all this over here, and he just kind of went, well, I'm gonna go do something else now. But we got really close on some of them. But again, it was like, kind of like, how do we ship this? And I think also a lot of, and I know you preach this a lot, is like, you know, ship quick.
Yes. Get something out the door.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, that was a big lesson there, because we spent like 6 months on wireframes and prototypes and just kind of get, you know, concepts and naming and branding just to kind of get it to a point where it was just like, nah, okay, was this, you know, we spent a lot of time.
Let's, 6 months and nothing, oh God.
Yeah, no, it was brutal.
It's the worst nightmare.
So then eventually, how that led me into Amazon was, I was working at a company, again, kind of like this, sort of like between, like, you know, making good money, but being bored, kind of working for myself, so mm-hmm, to speak. And I think one of the, I don't know which amazing selling machine it was one of them, maybe like four or something, or
nice,
three,
nice,
okay. I don't know.
What year? This is probably 2014?
This is 2014.
14, okay.
Yeah. And family member was kind of, because he was like tied pitching into a lot of like affiliate pitching marketing stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He wasn't just pitching it. He was actually having his own success with it at the point. So I was kind of like curiously looking at, you know, like, what is this about, you know what, mm-hmm, I mean? So anyways, I kind of was like doing it part-time, doing it on weekends, and
you bought the Amazon machine.
Yeah,
okay, good.
So, and it was like, let's see if this, I mean, the benefit of it at the time was like, I didn't have a partner to rely on.
Yeah, you had no crutch. It's you.
It was just me. So I was like, all right, well, if there's anyone to blame, it's gonna be if this sucks,
take your responsibility. Yeah, okay.
It'll be on me, right? So I just kind of did it on the weekends and, you know, farted around with it for a bit. And then it wasn't, I think it was probably the middle of 2014, around October, working this job. And it wasn't making any money. It was just kind of like, you know, maybe it might have turned to something interesting. And mm-hmm, I was like, screw it. Like, I'm going to give, I basically set aside 6 months worth of income,
okay,
and said, I'm going to give myself 6 months to make this work. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, I'll go get another job. That's fine. And about 3 months into it, it was like making money.
So you quit. So you got 6 months and you said, boom, I'm out of the corporate. Yep. I'm going to go. And again, a lot of people have had some version of this, but it's like owning it and saying, hey, I'm going to give this my all.
Yeah.
I think that's a brilliant idea. And you know, you had 6 months to live on. And so again, you can get a job, you're a designer, you have skills. So if it failed, you can always go back.
Exactly.
It's a pretty safe risk. I think like people need to manage the risk and not like, hey, if you have a mortgage payment coming up in 7 days, you have kids and you have a job, like, don't quit your job and like try to go to Amazon. Like, that's a very bad idea. But you know what? You had kids at this time or no kids?
I had one daughter.
Okay.
I still have her. She still exists.
Yeah.
I had my daughter, and my wife was pregnant. So
wow,
there was a little bit of like, you know, a little bit of fire there. Like, you know, need to make it happen,
yes,
kind of thing.
Yes. I think kids are a huge catalyst, by the way.
Oh, huge. It was big.
When my wife was pregnant, that's when I started making money. Before that, I was like, I was a joke and just like playing video games. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, when my wife got pregnant, that's like, woo, like, we got to make money.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, being a father, you need to be responsible. So anyway, I'm amazing. So
no, I mean, it's true. If I just like echo that a little bit, it's like, it is, you know, especially early on, like the driving force, because I could see that the life the life that I could provide, doing what I was doing was okay, mm-hmm. but it wasn't going to sort of set up any kind of security. It was still, yep. even though I was making good money, it was still kind of paycheck to paycheck.
Yep.
It was still like, you know, there was still some uncertainty involved, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I wanted to, earlier on, I basically said, you know, I want to, and maybe that was tied into a little bit with like the trying to find different ventures or trying to mm-hmm. find a business that would scale. Was like, I don't want to have to worry about money.
Yep.
I don't want to have to worry about like, I mean, not to give the idea that I'm like, I'm just like bawling out, but I just don't want to have to worry about it. You know,
sure,
I mean, I don't
sure.
want to like go like, oh, I'm like, oh, like want this thing or like, yeah, how are we going to, you know, I know we'll make rent, but like, I was just tired of living like 6 months into the future.
Sure, sure, sure. Makes sense.
So anyway, so I started with my first product. It failed miserably.
Okay.
It's a total bomb. I remember like ordering it, and I think part of it had to do with like just the pace at which I was moving mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. the amount of time I was spending on it. It just kind of like, you know, by the time I got my samples, I was paying way too much because I only like sourced like 3 factories mm-hmm. and like got them here and like got a box. And like at the time I like, they were like laser engraved mm-hmm. and everything and sent them in. It was like, there was already, you know, 2 or 3 guys in there with, you know, 1,000+ reviews mm-hmm. and they were just like cranking, you know what I mean? I'm like, ugh. So I was like trying to sell my 100 units.
Okay. Well, 100, how did you get a 100-unit order? That's very like, that's super small. No.
Yeah. No. I mean, it was. I just, so it was part of.
How did you get normally? I mean, I know if you go to Alibaba, you normally most people are going to ask for a custom item at least 2,000 units, 1,000 units mm-hmm. minimum. Most of the guys will ask even 3,000. So yeah. I'm assuming, did you go like AliExpress or somewhere? Like, how did you get a 100-unit order?
It was Alibaba. Maybe I had a really good profile pick or something.
Okay. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The sales lady was like, ooh.
Sure, I'll
Mr.
give you 100.
Seth, you're so cute.
Yeah. But was this like you had any label or anything on it, or was it just kind of generic?
Well, okay, so having like, you know, kind of a packaging background, I knew where I could cut corners a little mm-hmm. bit and still mm-hmm. kind of have like a, you know, branded experience, so to speak. So the box was just a plain brown craft box with a nice sticker on it. So I just had to like pay a little bit, you know. Stickers are cheap.
Yeah.
So I could buy a lot of stickers, but boxes are more expensive for mm-hmm. some reason, right? So bought the stickers, not the box, or I bought whatever I think the factory at the time gave me a few different options in terms of their, like, you know, just their stock.
Yeah.
You know, no frills. These are the boxes we get from the back, the guy across the street or whatever. Right. And so it was just that, but I could, you know, design some stuff and
put a sticker on it,
put a sticker on there, make it nice branded, put like laser etching.
And the product though was just a generic, right?
It was
the product itself didn't have any logo or anything.
No,
on it.
It did.
The product.
It had a laser etched logo.
Wow. That's amazing for 100 units. I don't see that very often.
No, I mean, I don't know.
I don't know how you did that, but okay.
I mean, I mean, there are definitely some of the just like asking some of the factory reps like, hey, I want this, and just like they would go quiet.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They wouldn't reply. So maybe I just got a really hungry factory rep and they're just like, good. And I don't know,
this product you're not making it now, or you are? Okay, you didn't. Okay, someone failed miserably.
It was a kitchen product. It was you probably remember these, they're like these potato julienne potato peelers.
Oh yeah, okay.
That was like my first. I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna just like kill it. And like I plugged it into the calculator. I was like, oh, are you kidding me? I'm gonna be like a millionaire in 2 weeks. This is gonna be insane. Right. Okay, and then I was also part of a little like collaborative like seller group at the time.
Okay, yeah.
We still stay in touch, but we like worked out of a garage, literally. Mm-hmm. We're all working out of this garage. And I was like, yeah, I got my stuff in there, and I'm like, you know, learning advertising, and I'm like kicked on advertising, and I'm like selling like 2 a week, and I'm like, I think I'm doing good. Like, I don't really know if I'm doing, I don't think. And I would like ask like, hey, you know, how much are you selling? Like, oh, I don't know. Like, I think I sold like 20 today on something, some like makeup product. And I'm mm-hmm. like,
damn.
And she's like, I'm not even really advertising. I'm like, damn, this really sucked.
So you didn't do as good as you thought.
No, first product was awful. I mean, I ended up breaking even on it in the end. I sent all the stuff back and it was fine, but yeah, it bombed.
Okay, so fine. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of people's first product don't do well, and then but you didn't quit, obviously.
No, I mean, it was a great lesson. I learned 2 really important things from mm-hmm. that. One of them was, you know, just sort of getting my mind right in terms of estimation of effort.
Mm-hmm.
I had a great mentor at the time, and, you know, I was talking a lot with him, and I'm like, hey, you know, I don't understand, you know, why this product would be here. Like, this product over here is like outselling me like 200 to one.
Yep.
And my branding's better. I mean, I know I've got like the packaging's not great, but that shouldn't matter. I'm like, at this point, my listing's better. I've got, you know, I got kind of enough reviews at this point. Like, what the hell is the problem? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, you don't really know what this guy's doing fully. You know what I mean? You know, this guy could be like running like tons of giveaways. Mm-hmm. He could be, or girl, whatever. You know, we didn't know. And I was like, oh, so there's like, people can, it sounds stupid to say this out loud, but like people can go harder than other people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I was just like,
you can influence your sales. Like, wow.
Yeah. Like, you can do all this like crazy, like giveaways. You can do all these like crazy, you know, just sales, ways to influence rank and, you know, whatever it was, you know what I mean? There was this like, there in my mind, it was just, I didn't know. I had no experience with the platform. It was just like, do these things in this order. And then you start advertising and eventually you'll have a $1 million product. And, or 100, I think at the time, like, I think Amazon was like, their big thing was like 6-figure product a month or something like that. You know what I mean? That was like
the Amazing Selling Machine you're saying?
Yeah.
That was a pitch? Okay.
That was like, at the time it was like, I remember Matt saying like, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is, you're optimizing all your decisions to kind of get to the point where you're going to find a fine list and market a product that'll, maybe not profit you, but gross you like 6 figures.
Okay.
Anyway, so that was a big lesson. Like, and people can go harder than other people. And like, you don't always know.
Yeah, you don't know what they're running. If they're running whatever, Facebook, they're doing Google, they're doing whatever. They have a salon and they're getting people to go, or they have a shop and they're getting their customer, whatever. You don't know what's happening.
I had no idea. So the concept of economies of scale as it related to all those different activities were totally unknown to me. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, wow. So I just had to kind of like almost go to kind of go like, well, now that I know that there is a bunch of stuff you can do besides just what I'm seeing here, then it started to kind of like open up what was possible a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that was a big lesson. The other lesson was just kind of determination. I worked about, I don't know, a block and a half from where I lived at the time.
Yeah,
okay. And so after every day on this, you know, working this, I think the window where I had this product that didn't fail, or that failed rather, was like, I don't think I wasn't married to it. So it was maybe I spent like another month on it. Okay. After the point was just like, wasn't moving. I'm done.
Okay.
But for the next 3-4 months, when I started when I kind of sourced and launched the next product, I would walk every day from my house to this garage every day, you know, block and a half, 2 blocks, whatever. And man, every day it was like, it was rough walking home because I'd have to like, you know,
look at your family and like, say, I'm not selling one thing every day.
Or I'm like, or later on, I'm like finding this factory. I'm like trying to find these factories. I'm like, nobody's going on. And like, nobody's replying to me. Mm-hmm. Or like the guy that did reply, like the products are busted. I got the samples and these are like super janky, just like awful samples.
Crappy
like,
products,
what am I, you know, like I waited 4 weeks for this. Mm-hmm. So it just became like an interesting exercise in determination at that point where I was like, I'd walk home totally bummed
because
I hadn't made $1 billion that day, right? To like the next day, kind of like going, okay, man, well, today you're gonna like do better, and like you're gonna do a little bit better than you did yesterday, and whatever it takes, you're gonna make it happen. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't something that was inherent to me, and I don't think it's something that isn't probably inherent to most people, unless you're maybe like encouraged a lot as a person. Maybe I don't know how that works. I don't know, we're getting a little off subject.
Yeah, but you, I mean, you have to decide to keep going.
Yeah,
you could decide to quit or you could decide to keep going. And not, you know, some people don't always decide to continue.
No,
right?
Exactly. So there was like, that was a neat kind of, for me, like something that also kind of influenced that is I would see, because my mentor was also a mentor for other people, and he would come in and like mentor in the same space that we were in, right? And sometimes we would like contribute if we could, if we were doing well and we could have our own experience, we contribute to that. But it was almost one for one. I would see the people who would come in, man, they were really quick to fall off. And
a lot of people giving up.
Yes.
Okay.
They were very concerned with how quickly they could make money, which was getting in the way of them making progress on making money. They were very quick to kind of worry about a lot of the things that were in their way instead of figuring out ways to handle them.
Yep.
And so I would almost, it was kind of an unfair advantage, to be, I'm being honest.
Because you're watching the failures. You see this guy gives up. Wow. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Cause you know, like you've seen the bodies, the skeletons.
Yeah. Right? Totally. The body count was enormous.
It's people failing.
Yeah. They would come in.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So you didn't want to be a skeleton.
It's not only that. It was like I could see how useless it was to sit there and complain about how hard it was. to sit there and like worry about how I couldn't do one thing or the other because I tell you what, the guy who's crushing it, the guy who's in front of me, whose lunch I want to eat, isn't worrying about that.
Yeah.
He's worrying about getting it done so he can kill me.
This is a super key point, which is how useless it is to complain.
Yeah.
If you say Amazon is hard, your bank account doesn't grow. If you say this is too hard, like just saying that does nothing for you. It doesn't help you, right? Saying, well, it's too competitive. How does that help you in the market?
And I think it becomes your truth more than not. You know what I mean? If you know, perception becomes reality in that way. And for some people, I could see, look, there was another guy who came in, and I talk about too many skeletons, but, you know, guy came in, man, he had a product that popped off. Mm-hmm. Like
that's extremely well.
Yeah, faster than mine.
Yeah.
Better margins. It was a seasonal product, but it was like, it went bananas fast, right? Yeah. One thing or another happens. He gets some counterfeiters coming in. And like, this is back in, you know, again, 2015, where there was no, like brand gating was like maybe a thing. And like, anyway, so he gave up, he had been doing this for like 2-3 months. And this wasn't a guy who had any like special, like he wasn't some like marketing guru. He wasn't some like, he has a background in manufacturing or supply chain. He just like found a good product and it like went bananas.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, had like a 6-figure month and he's just like, this is amazing. And then some counterfeiters, and then something happened and his listing got like bombed. And he was like, this is too much. I'm out.
Wow.
And I was like,
wow. I've run into a couple of people like that. And it kills me. Because you're so close. I mean, they've even tasted it. You know what I mean? I'm like, how could you do that to yourself?
That hung me up for a while, to be quite honest. Because I'm like, this guy just like stumbled into this crazy product or whatever, and he's straight just destroying it. And I'd be like, damn, I'm like sourcing like crazy and trying to find factories and like, you know, going, you know, hitting my head up against the wall and like up till 4 a.m. like on Skype.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Trying to get samples here and all sorts of stuff. And I think at first I was really upset because
maybe that could happen to you.
Well, I was like, why isn't this happening to me? Mm. You know what I mean? Why? I just tripped over and like fell into a pot of gold. You know what I mean?
So hold on. So we didn't get into the lunch and with the successful lunch yet. So what happened? How you got the product, you got the samples, it hit. And then how quickly did you see success?
Oh, mine?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So for me, it was, So from the point that I listed and launched, it was actually very fast. It was maybe a couple months, maybe a few months before it was just like, it was like, oh crap. Leading up to that point, I did a lot of sourcing because I was looking for a very specific type of product. I didn't have any manufacturing background, so I didn't know how to search what I was really looking for. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like, you know, whatever, silicone spatula, whatever it was, right? And I couldn't find the product.
What were you looking for? Were you looking for something specific? Like, reviews and like no, bestseller no. rank this or
is,
anything like that?
This was sourcing. I'd already decided the product I was going to do. It wasn't the product. It was sourcing the factory.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I was like, how am I going to get this factory to make this? Because it wasn't like a normal thing. It like had some like functionality that was some parts that were attached to it that were odd. Right? It sounds like,
different sex toys
or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, but you know what I mean? Like it was weird, right? So it wasn't just a silicone spatula. It was like a silicone spatula with like, you know, special kind of like aluminum handle or something that you can't find anywhere.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So.
And what made you decide on that product, by the way? Like, how did you say you want this and you want to add something to it? Like what was the criteria to pick that?
I could see, I ordered a bunch of the products that were doing well.
Yeah.
I just basically tore them apart. Mm-hmm. I really looked at why is this product better?
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually something, it was probably the only thing, honestly, that helped me in the beginning, because everyone else that was selling similar products were just like, yeah, Alibaba, this one looks good. Yeah, okay, good. Put our label on it and like, go. And they were first to market, and they would straight up destroy me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, they're first to market, they're getting reviews, their product actually is less expensive. But they were missing what actually made the product better. And that was a very key point. So that thing, that the 3 months that I wasn't really wasted time. The three months I spent trying to actually find...
It wasn't wasted because you found the thing you were trying to get.
Exactly.
Yep.
So in that way, it was great, but I was also, you know, I was a little behind. Yeah, I had a lot of catching up to do. So once I got it, you know, got my reviews in and, you know, pictures were tight, listing was tight, was optimized, ads were good, and it was just a matter of like...
So you put it up and then what? Did you start saying organically right away? How did that go?
Weird. Yeah. Okay, so at first it was like, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm on page 20, like, where is this thing, right?
Yeah.
It's listed. It's like, I've got all the keywords. What the hell? And then so, you know, kind of standard launch.
The standard launch. Yeah. The giveaway, whatever
right,
deal. And especially in that time, it was actually even fully okay to even give away something and ask for a view in exchange.
Yeah.
Like, that was totally legit back then.
The disclaimers were like, as long as the person wasn't
unbiased, honest review, right?
So much of that.
Yeah. But that was totally legit. Happy, everyone. You know,
honestly, it
standard.
Still is.
Yeah.
Like, not on Amazon. Amazon
okay,
aside,
yeah, yeah.
But it is.
As long as you just go correct. FTC, if you say, you just say that they're getting it for free.
Yeah, exactly, it's totally perfect. Fine. But good. Amazon,
Amazon's a different beast.
Yeah. Amazon rules, right? So, anyway, so, you know, like, you want to, like, know what I did?
Yeah, like, launch. Week, first day, first month, you know, how did it, how quickly did this thing catch fire?
Okay. I want to say it was like 2 months.
Okay.
I remember like the first, I remember getting ordered like 3,000 units. And I was really cautious. I didn't want to send a bunch of units in because I didn't want to have to like, if there was something wrong and there was something totally wrong. Like we had sourced the packaging. We sourced this like a PVC packaging that didn't cure all the way.
Which is like a plastic, right?
PVC. Yeah. It's like a plastic, like a plastic, like those thick plastic bags that you kind of get, like zipper bags.
Yep.
So we're like, oh, this is all we'll need. We'll be good. And put this thing in the product and sent it up. And apparently what had happened was, I won't dwell too much on this, but because it didn't cure and we airshipped all 3,000.
Cure is what, like dry? Like what does that mean to cure the plastic?
When plastics or polymers cure, they create a more solid bond between like...
So it's kind of like they merge kind of.
Yeah, like, you know, like super glue, like fully dries.
Okay, yeah.
It's
yeah.
cured, right?
Okay.
So because these envelopes were made out of plastic and they got kind of stuffed in a box real quick and put on an airplane. And underneath the airplane, it gets really cold.
Mm.
And the stuff was uncured. So this stuff all hit Amazon. And when the customers got it, like it was a super brittle plastic.
It would break.
It would like, because the thing wasn't secured inside the envelopes, it would slide around and just like shoot out.
Oh, wow.
So Amazon would put these things in these boxes and it would get to the end. And like, you know, Amazon, like,
yeah, they don't get it.
They put in a giant
in
box.
Boom,
who cares?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the customer would get it and it would be like shot out the side. It'd be like rattling around in this box. And I was just like, oh, my God.
Anyways, so how you figured that out because of reviews? You figured out because you order one inside?
Well, because people who we.
Oh, the giveaways.
The giveaways. Okay. Right? People were like, hey, by the way, I really like the product, but like.
It popped out of
the packaging. I'm like, ugh. So this, the reason I mentioned this is ties into the whole like launch of this thing.
Yeah.
So I ordered 3,000 units, get like, you know, I think I air freighted maybe 1,000 units and like ocean freighted 2,000. I don't know. I was playing it pretty conservative, but I wanted to, like, you know, launch 1,000. This at the time, also I'll add this because this was key at the time and it kind of tied into the like estimation of effort. I like that whole first order was as far as I was concerned, like trash.
Yeah. You're not gonna make money on it.
Give it away, burn it. I don't care. Like this is for me to dominate this niche and this was for me to learn about what I'm doing. So that served me well.
Yep.
So we launched this thing. Do the giveaway thing, whatever. I think we're about like 2 weeks in. We're getting some feedback because now people are actually receiving the product, right? It's in fulfillment centers.
Yep.
People who are ordering, getting back, like, hey, the packaging's like jankety.
Yep.
And I'm like freaking out. So I had the factory like send me a bunch of repackages and I'm like at my house, like repackaging.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Because you sent in 1,000, you had 2,000 to do it.
Yeah.
But now when the people complained, they didn't leave you bad reviews, did they?
Some of them did.
Some did. Okay.
So I had to like, and this is back when you could like, you kind of knew who was leaving a review. We'd be like, hey, like we'd send a new packaging or we'd send a replacement and we'd handle it.
Okay, good.
So it was good. But there were some people that were a little salty.
Yeah, sure.
Which was like crazy because they're getting free products. I never understood that. Anyways.
Oh, was the reviews the free one and then they leave a bad review?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's
like
crazy.
That's like the double, like, this is the worst.
Well, you know what's crazy is that our first product was also terrible.
Yeah.
In terms of the packaging, the thing, it was scratched up, dirty. Like, it literally was giving to people dirty. And I was like, I knew it was done. Like, my next order, I'll have to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
All the reviews came in 5 stars. No joke, we had 4.8 stars. I couldn't believe it. I go, how is this possible? So sometimes people care about the packaging. Yeah. Sometimes it's scratched, but it still works. Like, who cares? It's really interesting. The Amazon customer, the Amazon world is interesting in that fashion. But
and you think, like, the packaging did its job for the most part. It kept the product from being damaged, right? Like what it's supposed to do.
Sure,
it's supposed to. It's like a nice little womb for the package, you know. So we spent the whole time doing this like crazy thing, and then like as we're like repackaging this stuff, the sales just kind of like sort of like incrementally climb. I think we were doing like 5 a day, and then we're doing like 10 a day, and this is like maybe over the course of like a week and a half, 2 weeks, and then we got tied in with like a review group.
So yeah,
they were doing like,
okay,
you know, free and unbiasing. It was like, God, and we're like stuck at like 20 reviews for like 2 weeks, which at the time seemed like an eternity.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
So she's like, yeah, she had some lists and some people. And then so she would get like a small commission for kind of generating the lead or whatever. And we would reimburse. And it was all, you know, on the up and up. They'd leave the disclaimers and everything. And at some point, I think we were getting... I was using like, I wanted her to use some super URL, but then she didn't want that because it was like, I think she was also getting like an affiliate commission on top of that, and super URLs would like affect that. I don't know what happened, but for some reason, once we hit like 102 reviews over the course of maybe 3 or 4 weeks.
And just briefly, super URL is basically a URL that URL helps you rank, basically, right? It has like some special stuff. That was the theory. They've definitely, they used to work a lot better at that time than they would, let's say, now. I don't use them at this point.
Yeah,
but yeah,
it's hard to say. It's like, it's also like you can't, I mean, half the stuff we do, it's like, maybe this is working. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to do this thing and because the magic eight ball told me to. So let's
try it. And you try it and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So, okay, so you got 102 reviews.
And then it just went bananas. Mm-hmm. Like, it just blew up. I don't even know why. Like, we were selling, we weren't even like coming in at like a super low price or anything. I think, you know,
$15 or something.
Yeah. Like 15, 16.
Okay.
And then I think I wanted to get to $20 for this product, 'cause it was like really fatty margins at that point.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with, I mean, you're scooping up a lot of the FBA commissions, right? And you're scooping off a lot of your sales commissions, whatever fees. And so it left me with like healthy margins to advertise and like, you know, do whatever with.
Yeah, and knowing this product, there's a lot of people who sell it at $7, $8, $9 or whatever. So definitely you were not the low price.
No.
Yeah.
So anyways, we got kind of like 100, I was like 102 reviews, I think, was like the magic number.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, okay, now we're selling like 40 a day. Like, what? And I'm like, oh, well, and I started doing the calculations, like, we're going to stock out, like, right now.
So yeah.
Order, do like a bigger, okay, I'm gonna do 5,000 because, and I was like, my forecast game was a bit weak at this point.
Yes,
so I was like, 5,000. It's like double the order almost. Wasn't enough.
Yep.
A couple more weeks go by and we're selling like, I don't know, like 60, 70. A day.
Mm-hmm,
and I'm like, raise the price. You know, at some point...
you got to raise the price. Yeah.
At some point, I was charging $32 or something for this product.
Oh, my gosh,
wow. That was, like, super... I mean, it wasn't nothing to source, but it wasn't, like... It wasn't some $10
item. Yeah, sure.
And I'm, like... I was almost scared at that point because I figured people were going to start leaving me bad reviews.
I know. I feel that way too. Yeah.
And I'm like, even to me, I'm like, I'm not interested. All I wanted to do was like slow down sales without stocking out. I didn't really care if people bought it. I almost preferred that they didn't at that point. Just stop buying my product.
But people wouldn't.
Did you
sell more or the same or a little bit less?
A little bit less.
A little bit less. Okay.
And it was like the margins were just like, this is insane. Like, it did slow down the sales some, but it wasn't like enough. Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm at like, you know, I'm up till 3, 4, 5 in the morning, Skyping with the factory, resending them artwork, you know, reconfirming packaging artwork, reconfirming product specifications and doing all the stuff so the product isn't like busted this time.
Yeah. And again, now if you're at 50 sales per day and then just math here, let's say you're selling it at like 25, $30, there's more than $10 per product in profit at that point.
Yeah.
So let's just say lowball, $10, 50 units a day, $500 a day. That's what? That's like a $400,000 profit in a year? No, $200,000.
Yeah.
$200,000. Anyway.
Something. I don't know. My math
but
sucks.
It's like a ridiculous amount. I mean,
yeah, no, it didn't make sense.
2-3 months, like, boom. Yeah. $500,000 or whatever, $250,000, like...
It didn't make sense.
That's crazy.
The graph went something like this. It was like January, February, and March. You just started to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I was honestly scared.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, what do I do? Like, this thing's going to stock out. And like, that's like the kiss of death, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. You stock out.
Yeah.
And you're forgotten about. Amazon hates you now.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you messed up the algorithm.
The algorithm, right. Yeah, yeah. A9 is going to take a big, you know, dump on your front lawn. It's going to be a mess, yeah, right? So... Anyways, so it became this whole juggling act for like 6 months,
mm-hmm,
of like
trying to stay in stock.
I'd order enough product. I think I would do good enough. I'd drop it down to a price where it was like a good value, and I wasn't like losing rank and everything. And then it would just the number would bump up. So then I was, instead of selling like 50, 60, 70 a day, I'm selling like 120 a day, and I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah.
So then
I'm like,
it was really weird. So then I would place a bigger order. Yeah. Like, fine, 10,000 order. Like, this will do it.
Yeah.
Right? And no, it wouldn't do it. The last order we placed was like, I think it was a 75,000 unit order, because it was like, can we just like...
Can we stay in stock
at this point? I mean, it doesn't help, you know, the COVID and all this other stuff isn't helping much.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
So... That's kind of
that's brilliant. So again, and that was like 2014, 2015, and today this is still your bestseller. This is still like your bread and butter.
Yeah, very much so.
So you did a great job, and I know that it is a different design. You put some work into that, and like you mentioned, 3 months finding this thing. So it's absolutely awesome. Now, what do you think was like? Because you've launched other products,
yeah,
and not all of them have had that success, or maybe none of them have had the same success, mm-hmm, right? But what do you see as the important thing? Why did this take off?
I mean, I think this particular, if I'm being honest, was kind of right time, right place.
Mm-hmm.
Like and that's not the only thing, but it was right time, right place in terms of the product. Because a lot of the other guys who were, and probably had I never come into this market, mm-hmm, this particular niche, like I think it would probably be the same players that were there, mm-hmm, when I started, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm, everyone was kind of sourcing the same thing. Nobody was really doing
cheap
anything.
Stuff. Not really caring too much about the quality, just
let's get it.
Almost
get it
like Dollar Tree kind of items.
Yeah, very similar. And they didn't. I think they just didn't really understand the.
They didn't have the Seth effect.
They didn't have the Seth.
They didn't effect, have the Seth sure. eye. No.
No. I mean, they didn't. I think they didn't really care about having a good product. If I'm being honest. Like when I did this, I didn't. I mean, this is like coming from a design background. As a designer, I was always thinking about, how do I make something better? How do I make something that people will like? How do I make something that people will care about? And so that carried over into my thinking on this, right? Mm-hmm. So I wasn't just going to go like, oh, I'll source it and I'll put it up. And in the seventh, the 11th hour,
mm-hmm,
I almost was there because I couldn't find a factory. It just so happened that I sent the right picture to the right sales rep. And he's like, oh yeah, we have that.
So you were this close to losing out on literally millions of dollars in sales.
Yeah.
Like this close.
Oh, like a gnat's ass.
Yeah.
Like microns, man. Yeah. It was literally I was up that night.
Yeah.
This is a funny story. I'll make it quick. I was up that night on, you know, one of my late night Skype nightmares. And
the nightmare that brought the dream.
Well, yeah, I mean,
the nightmare that brought the dream.
It was, at the time, you're like, oh, this is the worst thing ever. Like, am I ever gonna sleep again?
Yeah.
So I'm up and the factory who I had ordered a bunch of samples from was like really pressing me. So they're like, hey, so are we going to like do business? And I'm like, yes. And I'm like, what about this? And can we modify that? And it was still a compromise, but it was even the compromise was better than a lot of the other guys were doing, but it was still a compromise. This other factory who I knew was more competent, but had poor communication and just, they weren't getting it. I was talking to them both. I'm like literally going to like pull the trigger on like placing this 3000 unit order. And I'm like trying to explain to this guy what I want. He's just not getting it. And I'm like, okay, hold on a second. I have my bank details. 1 second. I'm like, this is what we need. And he's like, oh, you mean this? And I'm like, bing. That's it. How quickly can you get it to me?
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, this, you know, whatever, whatever, whatever. And I'm like, I'm gonna have to get back to you on those bank details. So
nice.
I just stalled those guys until I actually got the sample. They overnighted it. And it was like, boom. But for me, it was like, how am I going to get, in that moment, how am I going to get the right product? You know, how am I going to deliver some kind of value and not like, can we swear?
Something about, and it's a huge difference, right? Because you could have had the same, and I have some, I've experienced that where you could do the same thing everyone does And you may or may not have success, yeah. and it may be short-lived, and it may be not a good long-term decision.
Yeah.
But it was literally like that day you were going to go the other route, and that could have been maybe $100,000 product. Maybe it would have succeeded way less, and maybe you would have been out of the game, potentially.
Yeah, probably. It might have been like, you know, maybe not the product that won. That product that won may have been like the fourth or fifth or sixth product, or whatever it was, but... That was the right decision to make. It was like, I knew what I wanted, and it was just kind of not being totally uncompromising, but I think at some points I was, and it got into trouble, but definitely like knowing where the value was, knowing what made the product good.
Yep.
And getting as close to that as possible.
Yep. And I think one thing to like take home on this, right, is first of all, you start with that Julian Peeler, right? And you took action right away.
Yeah.
Right. And at least that got you in the game. You're in Seller Central. You have that. You're starting the experience. And then you're looking for a product. And you're not picking a product just because of time. You wanted something and you were working to get that thing. Because some people might be like, well, I don't know what product to pick. That's a different stage than, hey, I want this and actively searching for it. Right. And so some people take a long time. I always say, like, just pick anything. I don't care. Pick anything. And in that case, you had already done it. You'd gone the Julian Peeler or whatever it is. You're in the game, and then now you're looking for products. So you're actively looking rather than just being like, not looking.
Yeah, and I think the way that I kind of had, because I didn't want to repeat the first product that kind of happened again. Like, I don't call it like lazy sourcing or whatever, or kind of like needing to be lucky to make it happen. Mm-hmm. The way I handled that for the second product was I oversourced the factories too, but... like the opportunity matrix that I built out in terms of like, you know, products and is it viable? You know, what's the competition, whatever. I think at the time you were like, as instructed to be like, you know, just find like 10 products. I was like, okay, well, what if I found 30?
Nice. I like that.
So that was a big advantage, right? Because people were going to stop at 10. Well, cool. Well, I'll stop at 30 and I'm going to have a lot more stuff to pick from. Mm. So that was another kind of like ace in the hole there.
Nice. And the one you found, was it one of the first 10 you started listing? Or was it 20 to 30, the one that you found?
I was pretty methodical, so I think it was late in the list. It was late. And I'd even like, even when I found it, I wasn't like, oh, this is it, I'm off. It was...
Okay, this is a little bit better than the other one.
Yeah, I treated it very mechanically.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be the guy who doesn't get excited and doesn't come off of this task until I have 30 products. And so it was just like, I'm going to add this and like, okay, good, this fits the criteria. It was very... workmanlike, you know what I mean? I'm just going to add it and good and add it and good. And this one looks interesting. I'll put a little star next to this one maybe and just like kind of add it and add it and add it. And I'll stop when I reach my number.
And what were the things you were collecting? Like numbers of reviews, images of the competitors? Like what was this grid like?
Even like probably simpler than that. It was, you know, all the basic information like product title, like so I could find it later.
Sure.
The link to the item.
Yep.
I didn't really care about the images so much because I knew that was a strong suit for me because I knew I could like...
You could do something nice.
Yeah, it wasn't a problem. I wasn't so concerned with that. Maybe now it would be good to like kind of like, oh, well, you know, what converts, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I was mostly concerned with, how much... What was the entry... bear to entries, like number of reviews.
Yep.
I looked at... I don't think I could go back in time. Number of reviews, price, cost... and what those numbers calculated against, the overall number of units that could be sold per month, what would that equal in terms of profit?
Okay.
It was very basic.
Okay, yeah.
I know now there's like sometimes these matrix can kind of be
yeah,
like
some
really
crazy stuff.
Like,
no, I don't get too crazy, but like just okay.
It was like it's a
number of reviews, okay, how much are you gonna sell, how much you expect to sell, and what would be the profit? And like boom, okay.
Yeah, is it a viable product or isn't it? Okay. Is it gonna be hard? Is it gonna be hard to like smash into this category or isn't it?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like does this thing have legs or is this just like is all the traffic funneling into this one product?
Yeah, the one seller.
So those three things are really all I care about.
And
even today, it's kind of, I mean, in my opinion, it's kind of all that really matters.
Yep,
you know what
yep.
I mean? And then once I had those things, it was like good. And some of them were more like some of the products I put in that list were a little more, you know, maybe had a little more healthier margins, let's say. Mm-hmm. And some of them had less, maybe like, I don't know. It just sort of was like, it also, I think at the time I was looking at like, what's going to be the cheapest product in terms of like freight
mm-hmm. and that's good.
Storage. Cause it was,
air freight. That's great. I mean, some products you can't air freight.
Right.
So
you
that's
can't
good.
Do that with like LED TVs or
no.
or like kettlebells or something. You can't do that. So and that kind of fit into that a little bit. So it was a bit of a perfect storm of all those things kind of matched and made it a good product.
Awesome. Awesome. And so tell me now, you did this, you sold a bunch. And so what is your, let's say your revenue look like, let's say that first year or the second year, once you kind of started taking off, how did that look like?
I think the first year we did, these are gross numbers, yeah, right? Yeah, so, yeah. And to your audience, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of times these numbers, not that they would be inflated to get you to buy something. And I know this is like a public service announcement a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, numbers can be whatever the numbers are. They can be high. They can be low. You know, I was at the time mostly concerned with profitability, yep. And mostly concerned with, which it was profitable to some degree. I was having to move a lot of money back into product, yes. Just so I could restock.
To grow. Yeah, yeah.
I think the first 8 months I actually didn't make any money. And I was working like 12, 13 hours a day, and yeah. It made nothing, right?
But again, made nothing means
at the time
you use your profit to buy new product.
Totally.
So, I mean, you made your profit was an inventory, so it wasn't that you weren't making profit, which is a little different.
Yeah, no.
But you're taking home nothing.
You didn't
take money out of the business.
I did not pay myself.
Yeah, okay.
I did not pay myself for the first six or 8 months.
Yeah.
I think our gross revenue in the first year was something like $860,000.
That's great. That's amazing.
Second year. Because it popped off so quick, we only had like a 2 month difference between the first and second. Like, basically, the product launched, I think, in February 2015.
Yeah.
By January 2016, we were already pretty well established. I think that year we ended up doing like 1.3.
Nice.
And then started adding a lot of products. Following year, we did something like 2.1.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the following year, we did 2.4.
There you go. So basically, you're a millionaire.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of unspoken costs that go into that.
But let's say, look, I mean, I say typical, and you don't necessarily have to share the margin, but I go like, anybody in Amazon, if they're doing something right, is above 10% profit margin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like, and a lot of guys go up to 30. There's very few people that are, let's say, above 30. So I think like, let's say around 15 to 20% is sort of average, right?
Yeah.
And yours may be a little bit above average or whatever, but still, that's, you know, it's still millions of dollars of sales, and that's fantastic.
Definitely. We're
from before Amazon to after Amazon is quite a different world, no?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I couldn't argue with that.
Yeah,
for sure.
And tell me, what is like your wife after seeing this? Like, what was the emotion? How was it at home?
That's an interesting question. Interestingly, because I'm having to like replay that.
Okay.
So it's funny because at first when I was like before it was like she was very supportive.
Yep.
like I'm having to like preface this answer with all sorts of like different like,
things. Okay.
She was very supportive and like all these other things. But she she was very supportive. Before there were parts where because I was
leaving income, no?
I don't think she cared so much about that. Okay, I think she could see that this wasn't like a natively easy thing for me to do, if I'm being honest. At the time, I had to overcome a considerable amount of my own obstacles with regards to making this thing happen.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to experience me kind of barfing all those disagreements on her on a regular basis. So at some point, she was like, look, maybe you just need to go find another job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just go back to work.
You're stressed out.
Yeah, I'm like trying to make this thing which seems at the time like impossible happen.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, and she's like, maybe just like, you know, she's very sweet in that she wants me to be happy. She wants kind of everyone around her to be happy, right?
Absolutely.
She's a very, very sweet person. So the thought of like encountering considerable difficulty on like a day in and day out basis, I think probably made her a little uncomfortable. She probably wanted me to go like, no, why don't you go do something else? Cause this isn't for you. So I had to kind of disagree with her a little bit there, which at the time is probably looking a little crazy because I'm miserable.
Exactly. You're like, I hate my life. I can't sell on Amazon. It's a terrible opportunity, but I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
Right?
And that was the viewpoint.
That was
definitely
the attitude. Yeah.
right. Which sounds crazy, but
good,
it was.
No? And again, you have a family to take care of.
Yeah, I totally did. And she was, I had to set aside this money. She was working a job, not making much money at the time, kind of like covering our basic needs.
Okay, great.
Which
that's
was
that's
a huge
that's amazing.
Help. Yeah. So So that was before, right? And then it's kind of started to tick up and kind of started to like blow up. And we're mm-hmm. just, I'm like, we're just kind of like waiting.
Mm-hmm. We're waiting like, to see if it was going to break, right?
Yeah, right. We're just like watching and waiting and like, is this going to, and we're just kind of like really cautious and like, is this going to, and like, you know, kind of just being cautiously optimistic. And meanwhile, it's like, it's doing, you know, I don't know at the time it was whatever, even if it was, I think it was kind of like, you know, doing $10,000 a month. And it was mm-hmm. like, that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like doing 20 and 30. I was like, that's more money. And so, and again,
this is earnings. No, this is like, you're talking about earnings.
No, this is gross sales, right? So because we weren't paying ourselves, it didn't matter. It could be making $1 million.
You don't know. You
I don't know what I'm going to actually ever make money on this thing. Right. I know I would. I would just have to like never stock again. And yep. I would just, good. Here we go. There's your paycheck. And then at some point it was like, okay, like this is like a real thing. Mm-hmm. Like this isn't
making. This is your wife.
Yeah. And me kind of like, yeah, I think this is like a real thing. Like, I think I'm kind of in the same boat. He's like, I'm not sure if this, I mean, it looks good. I think it says there's numbers.
There's some zeros there.
It's on the screen. So I assume we're going to get the money. I don't know. And I think that eventually kind of went away and it was just sort of like, cool. Like, wow, we can rely on this. And we started kind of, I think for her, she was allowed to, I think she was allowed to live a life that she wanted,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which was one of like, she didn't, I mean, she works, she does all her customer service and stuff.
Mm-hmm,
like.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she wanted freedom.
Yeah.
She wanted freedom to kind of like make her own way.
Yes.
And this definitely afforded her that, it afforded me that. And so, yeah, there's been a big difference between, you know, kind of worrying about what's going to happen next, worrying about sort of the future of the family and kind of going like, oh, wow, this is, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was
after a while.
Yeah. After a while, I was like, oh, I think we're going to be okay.
When was that? Like after a couple of years, after like, after you had like some zeros in the bank account, finally,
I think
like,
it was because it grew so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem stable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was probably after a couple of years and, mm-hmm. and there were definitely some hiccups there. It wasn't like it was just some, you know, graph of the stars, and it's like unrelenting, like you know, crazy uptrending graph. It was, you know, it was like, whoa, this is crazy. And then, if you want to get into like horror stories, we can mm-hmm. get into horror stories too.
There's like counterfeits or stuff, or what?
I mean, there was counterfeiters. They were doing like this whole like, remember those like they did like a weird like drop shipping kind of like scam mm-hmm. where like someone would sit on your listing.
The hijacking, yeah, we'll hijack it and then ship it from AliExpress or
ship it from China. It'll get there in 8 weeks, and you know, meanwhile, they're just gobbling up a lot of sales because they have like repricing bots that were constantly mm-hmm. priced 1 cent below you, so they're beating you out for the buy box and all sorts of crazy stuff. And so there, you know, that would happen for 2 weeks and kind of like destroy the income and like end up with like bad reviews. And so it was like a whole like, oh, I've got to fix this now. And then it was like, okay, is it good for?
Yeah, is that going to be the end of me? Is this gone? Is this going to stay up forever?
Or even like, is this the end of the craziness? Really? Right. Like, are we going to? I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then it was like, we got in this whole wild trademark crazy thing that I don't know how much I can get into.
Did you get into any suit? Did you get a lawsuit filed? Or anything?
Yeah. No, it went fully. No, he didn't. They didn't file against me. They basically. There are certain people who specialize in getting listings taken down.
Mm.
And they do this by way of, you know, very different means. You know, you mentioned earlier by putting like profane language in the listing somehow. Or, they can do it through like, you know, place a bunch of orders and.
Yeah. Cancel, do whatever, or complain or whatever. Okay.
Product that was used, whatever. This guy was doing a thing where he was essentially saying I was violating his trademark.
Was it your trademark or was it his trademark?
The brand name was correct. The brand name is my trademark.
Yeah, yeah.
Fully trademarked, done.
Yeah.
Not contested. The line of the product shared some syllables. So so
instead of Apple, it's like
Snapple.
Okay.
There was some similarities, right? Or instead of like Apple, it would be like
Banana Pole,
Papple Plus.
Yeah.
Kind of like there were some similarities, and to be fair, like we had customers who, per them, were getting confused and like reaching
out to them. Sure.
And reaching out to them because you know, we had some, our marketing was really good, and we did really good at customer engagement, and people would write in and they would want to know more about our company, and they'd want to know more about who we were, and, you know, want to be included in what we were doing. So they would get confused and somehow end up on their website somehow by doing like an AOL search. I don't know how these people, because I tried to Google, like, it just wasn't possible to, I don't know how the confusion was made. Anyways,
fine. So long story short, that's their claim. Somebody went on and then was looking for you and went to them. That's not even.
No, they bought our product. Okay. They'd already bought our product and they were trying to get in touch with us off Amazon and somehow emailed them. And so this guy got a couple emails, got upset, and he basically asked me to change the brand name of one of the products, the sub brand or whatever you call the line. Yeah. And I said,
no,
not too kindly. You know, I was like, I mean, I wasn't mean about it, but I was like, no, this is no, I'm not doing that. So then he basically hired this Amazon lawyer to file bogus trademark claims against the product. So the product would be doing fine, just going, doing great, and then just like gone. And so that, if I'm honest, that was like definitely a crazy time.
Yep.
Because you'd be flying high, be like, great, you'd be relying on the money for future products, for advertising, all this stuff, and then it would just be like gone.
Wow.
And so that happened probably like 5 or 6 times.
Oh my God. Same one, same guy.
Same claim. Same, so we'd contact Amazon and be like, no, the brands are separate. It's totally a separate thing.
Yeah, but when they have a lawyer going to Amazon, sometimes they'll take action and it can become a pain.
Doing some things that, because generally speaking, and this is maybe useful to you guys, when Amazon makes a determination with regards to someone's ability to sell with regards to an opposing party, that assessment or that decision is usually, I won't say unbreakable, but it doesn't get modified.
Right.
Like if you had a disagreement with the product I was selling, the way I was selling, whatever, and you reported me, I get nuked. If I convince Amazon to relist me, generally speaking, they're not going to listen to you again.
Right.
It's going to be a done. Like,
yeah. Cause you, so, if it's the same complaint, you've already proved that complaint is either false or whatever. Yeah.
So this guy, the person who he had hired to do it, figured out a way to like bypass that.
Okay.
So, in the end, we ended up taking them to court.
Oh.
And ended up settling.
Oh, wow.
Which was kind of interesting.
Oh, wow. So you actually sued them?
Yeah. Cause
oh, wow.
So the second time it happened, I'm like, enough's enough.
Yeah.
And I'm no lawyer, but I can be like, this is like.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't do that. That's a false and knowing whatever thing, and fine. So settle. So.
I'm a bit of a investigator, and like, I don't know. I just like, I'm like a researcher, right? Like I get
mess with my family. See you in court. See you in court.
I'm like Godfather, damn it. I don't know. Like when I get like a thread of something that I'm interested in, I like pull it, and I just keep pulling it until I've got the whole sweater in my lap, right?
Yeah.
So when, especially when I was getting attacked, I'm like, how is he doing this? So I'm like deep in it now. Mm-hmm. I'm like,
what's the thing?
Who is this guy? Where does his domain redirect to? What are his social profiles? I'm like deep now, right?
Yeah.
And so I collected a bunch
private investigator.
I just collected a bunch of information, and then this guy just was dumb. He ended up like, and this is all public, like,
understand.
So, but he was like, once we were in, like, generally speaking, like, once you're engaged in a lawsuit with somebody, it's like you chill until like a determination is made. You don't keep doing shenanigans, right?
Yeah.
But he kept it. He did it 2 more times, and it like played into our favor. It was actually brilliant. Based on the data I collected and this specific person's their actions, it resulted in in the end, we didn't make any money on the lawsuit. Lawyers are expensive.
Right. Lawyers are expensive. You settle and the lost sales and whatnot. But in the end, you'd be like, look, you don't mess with me.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going to mess with us. You're going to mess with our brand.
Yeah.
And no shady tactics.
Yeah. No, it was so good. It was a big victory. It was it's a trying time, but we came out on top, which was nice.
Awesome. So came out on top. You're still on top. So everybody, do you want to say anything to like people who are either interested in Amazon or sitting on Amazon and want to get up to that level, you know, want to get into the, you know, $1 million mark? What do you see that people need to do?
There's so many, it seems like there's so many different ways to kind of like to skin a cat, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think probably, and I rely on that a little bit, you know what I mean? Like definitely if somebody's giving you advice in a particular direction and it's not working out, maybe it's not that you're an idiot. Maybe it's just that that particular path isn't a path forward for you in that product. You know what I mean? Maybe it's like, I don't know. I think that's one thing, right?
If you have advice that's not working, either try something else.
Try something else. Yeah.
Listen to somebody else do something.
I think the biggest barrier, and again, this is kind of like the thing that I learned early on, and the benefit of having been sitting down in those kind of other mentoring, witness to that, was like, good ideas are great. Money's awesome. All that thing, whatever. But the people who win at this game are persistent.
Yeah.
And they will not only, like, they won't foolishly, you know, slam their head against the wall until they start making money, but they will pay attention. They will pay attention to what is working and what isn't working, and they will do the things that work. And nice. I think that's probably the biggest thing is being willing to be persistent and realize that, you know, a lot of times, and again, I don't know sort of the context of mm-hmm. what we're doing here is, but meaning like...
yeah, it could be anybody. Some people advanced, beginner, whatever. Anyway.
Sure. But like, just realize that if I'm going to give like one piece of advice, mm-hmm. it'd be like, you know, realize it isn't necessarily like, it doesn't have to be a hard thing, mm-hmm. but it isn't necessarily an easy thing. Yep. Like it's don't expect to like your first product to just go like, ape stuff. My second product went great, awesome, it's still doing really good, I'm super thankful for that, without question. But that shouldn't be the expectation, because if it is, you're setting yourself up for failure a bit. Mm-hmm. So instead, I think realize that this is more of a marathon than a sprint. Mm-hmm. And if you can kind of make those decisions, be aware of what's happening, be kind of pay attention to what's in front of you, what's working, what isn't working. And even if that means what's working for you, then do those things. Play to your strengths. Don't like try to, that's maybe like a separate thing. Like play to your strengths if you can, because they're your strengths. And that's probably going to be your fastest path to success, is being persistent, you know, realizing that you're probably not going to be a success right out the gate, and that's okay. And, you know, just kind of chip away at it, and anyone who I've known who was persistent at this has made it.
Absolutely. Oh my God, I agree with that. There's nobody who's still going that never didn't do it. I mean, that is the case. And I've said this so many times. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah.
And see you guys next time.
All right.